You know, when I first started reading about this whole area of antisense oligonucleotides, I was just blown away. I mean, the idea that we can target diseases at their genetic root, at the RNA level, it's like science fiction, but it's real.
It's true. It really is a beautifully elegant concept. And I think what's so fascinating is how, simple the idea is, but then when you get into it, the execution is incredibly complex. So it's captivating for that reason.
Totally agree. And you sent us a mountain of research on this, from like the fundamental mechanisms of how these things work to the latest clinical trials. So today we're doing a deep dive into the world of ASOs. We really want to equip you with, a clear understanding of how they work, what diseases they can treat, and this really exciting future they hold.
Yeah, and maybe a good place to start is with just thinking about, what diseases could ASOs potentially cure or manage in the future? What's possible with this technology?
Okay, I love that. So let's break it down. First, for anyone who's new to this whole thing, what exactly are ASOs?
So at their core, ASOs are these short, custom-designed strands of genetic material. You can kind of think about them like molecular programmers. They can actually reprogram how your cells function by targeting these instructions that are encoded in RNA.
So instead of just like treating symptoms, we're talking about actually potentially correcting the underlying problems.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, so AS work by binding to specific RNA molecules, kind of like a key fitting into a lock. And there are two main ways that they can then disrupt these disease processes.
Okay, walk us through this.
Sure. So the first one is called RNase H1 cleavage. And just picture this. You've got the ASO, it binds to its target RNA, and then this binding actually calls over an enzyme called RNase H1,
Okay.
which acts like molecular scissors,
Oh.
chopping up that target RNA, preventing it from doing its job.
So it's like sending in like a saboteur to like destroy the enemy's blueprints before they can build their weapon or something.
100%, that's a great analogy. The second mechanism is called steric blocking. And in this case, the ASO still binds to the RNA, but instead of destroying it, it's more about like physically blocking it, preventing that RNA from interacting with other molecules that it needs to function.
So it's either destroying the blueprints or it's like jamming the machinery.
Yeah.
So ASOs have options.
They do. They have options. And this is where it gets even more interesting. So early ASOs, what we call first-generation ASOs, they had some limitations. They were, for example, quickly broken down by the body, and they didn't always bind as effectively as we wanted them to.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems like a huge challenge to get these tiny little molecules to their targets and keep them working effectively once they're there.
You're absolutely right. And that's why scientists have developed these different generations of ASOs with chemical modifications to overcome these hurdles. So one example is a modification called phosphorthioate, and it's a mouthful.
It is, yeah. What does
Now,
that actually do?
so think of it like this. By adding this phosphorothio group, it's like giving the ASO a suit of armor, making it last longer in the bloodstream, increasing its chances of actually reaching its target.
That's incredible. So it's like we're upgrading our molecular programmers, we're giving them better tools, better protection, all of that.
Exactly. And there are many other modifications, each with their own kind of advantages and disadvantages. But I think the key takeaway here is that scientists are constantly refining these modifications to make ASOs safer and more effective.
So this isn't just theoretical anymore. We've actually seen ASOs transition from like the lab to real-world medicine, right?
Absolutely. We have several FDA-approved ASO-based drugs that are already making a real difference in patients' lives. So one of the earliest examples is fomevirsen, and it was used to treat a serious eye infection called cytomegalovirus retinitis in patients who were immunocompromised.
And this is one of those first-generation ASOs, right? Did it work?
It did, it worked, and it was considered groundbreaking at the time. But like many first-generation technologies, there's a constant evolution. And fomevirsen was eventually withdrawn because newer treatments for HIV/AIDS, which is what often caused this eye infection, were much more effective.
That's a great point. It's not always a straight line from like discovery to widespread use. There's a lot of other factors that come into play.
Exactly. And there are other early examples. So mipomersen is a second-generation ASO, and it was developed for lowering cholesterol in people with a rare genetic disease. And while it was FDA approved, its use is somewhat limited now because of side effects and the fact that we do have other effective treatments for high cholesterol.
So still not perfect, but progress nonetheless. But then we come to like, A real success story with nusinersen for spinal muscular atrophy, or SMA. And this is a devastating disease that affects young children, right?
It does, yeah. And before nusinersen, the prognosis for these children was very, very grim. And I think this is a really great example of how ASOs can not just block something harmful, but can actually restore function.
You know, when I was reading about nusinersen, I was blown away by how elegant the solution is. It targets the pre-mRNA, which is like, you know, the blueprint before a protein is made. And by modifying how that blueprint is read, it can actually restore production of this crucial protein.
And it's FDA approved.
It is FDA approved, and it's had a significant impact on the lives of children with SMA. So it's one of the most compelling cases for, I think, the life-changing potential of ASO therapy.
Incredible. It sounds like ASOs are also making waves in treating this condition called hereditary transthyretin-mediated amyloidosis, or hATTR.
Yes. Yes, so we now have two FDA-approved ASO drugs for ATPR, patisiran, and enotersen.
Right.
And what's interesting is that patisiran actually uses a close relative of ASOs called Cirna. So they're both targeting RNA, but they have slightly different mechanisms.
Okay. And they both work by essentially reducing the production of this problem protein in this disease.
They do, yes.
And then we have golodirsen, which is being used to treat Duchenne muscular dystrophy, DMD. And this is another example of an ASO that actually modifies RNA splicing to restore the production of a protein, again, offering hope for patients with this very severe muscle-wasting disease.
This is all incredible. And it sounds like there's even more on the horizon. The research that you sent mentions a whole bunch of ASO drugs that are currently in clinical trials.
I know, it's really remarkable, the sheer diversity of diseases that are being targeted now by ASOs in development. Cancer, neurodegenerative diseases, metabolic disorders, you name it, people are looking at it.
So we're really just scratching the surface of what ASOs might be able to achieve.
Yeah, I think we are. But of course, you know, there are challenges, right? Not every drug that enters clinical trials ends up being approved. It's a very long and rigorous process.
For sure. And I imagine one of the biggest hurdles is actually getting the ASOs to where they need to go in the body. It can't be easy to deliver these microscopic molecules to their exact targets.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. Drug delivery is a major hurdle for ASO therapy. Yeah. It's like, how do you deliver a package to a specific apartment in a high security building?
And then you have to get through the door of the apartment itself, right? Like you said, getting that ASO inside the cell where it needs to do its work.
Exactly. So scientists are developing these kind of ingenious strategies to try to improve ASO delivery.
Okay.
So one approach is, you know, it's like giving our package like a special coating that makes it invisible to the security system.
I like that.
And in the case of ASOs, we're talking about chemical modifications that can protect the ASO from being degraded too quickly.
So like back to our molecular program analogy, we're equipping them with camouflage to sneak past the body's defenses.
100%, yeah. Another strategy is to use what are called delivery vehicles.
Oh.
And these are like tiny, stealthy couriers that can actually carry the ASO safely through the bloodstream.
I've heard of things like liposomes and nanoparticles being used for this. Are those the kinds of things you're talking about?
Those are exactly it. They act like microscopic delivery trucks, essentially, kind of shielding the ASO, helping it reach its destination.
Wow.
It's a fascinating area of research, and I think it's really crucial for unlocking the full potential of ASOs.
Yeah, it sounds like this drug delivery piece of the puzzle is almost as important as, like, designing the ASOs themselves in the first place.
It is. There's no point in having a brilliant molecular programmer if it can't get to where it needs to work, right? And researchers are making some incredible progress in this area.
That's really exciting to hear. You know, it's funny, as we're talking about all of this, I keep thinking back to, you know, nusinersen and its impact on SMA.
Mm.
It's truly remarkable what ASOs can achieve. But what about other diseases? What's kind of next for this technology? What are people excited about?
Yeah, I think the possibilities really are vast.
I mean,
there's a lot of excitement right now around using ASOs to treat diseases that are currently incurable. So things like Alzheimer's disease, Huntington's disease, these are neurodegenerative diseases that have a huge impact on individuals and families.
Right, and I could see why there would be so much interest there, because those are diseases where, you know, even a small delay in their progression would be a major breakthrough for patients.
Well, absolutely.
So how would ASOs actually be used to try to, like, tackle something like Alzheimer's?
So, you know, Alzheimer's disease is characterized by this buildup of certain proteins in the brain.
Right.
And that buildup leads to cell death and cognitive decline.
Okay.
So the thinking is, could we design ASOs to target the genes that are responsible for producing these harmful proteins?
Got it.
Essentially trying to, you know, slow down or even halt the disease's progression.
Wow, that would be revolutionary. But getting treatments into the brain, though, is notoriously difficult, right?
It is. It is. You know, the brain has this what's called blood-brain barrier, which acts like a kind of protective shield.
Yeah.
It's preventing a lot of harmful substances from getting in. So getting ASOs across that barrier, that's a major challenge, but researchers are coming up with some pretty clever solutions.
Like what? This sounds like a really high-stakes game of, like, molecular chess.
It does, doesn't it? So one strategy is to use those delivery vehicles that we were talking about earlier, designing them in a way that actually allows them to kind of like slip through the blood-brain barrier.
Okay.
Another approach that's being investigated is, you know, can we temporarily open the barrier?
Oh, wow.
Allow the ASO in and then close it back up.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, huge challenges, but also a lot of kind of ingenuity and hope in this area of research.
Absolutely.
I have to ask, though, you know, what about unintended consequences? Like, if ASOs are so good at targeting specific RNA sequences, what's to stop them from, like, accidentally binding to other things and causing problems?
That is a great question, and it really highlights the importance of rigorous testing and safety protocols in this field. So while ASOs are designed to be highly specific, there's always a chance of what we call off-target effects.
Uh-huh.
Which is basically, you know, the ASO binding to something that it wasn't intended to.
So, like, our molecular programmer accidentally deleting the wrong file.
100%. Yeah. And that's why there's a ton of research that goes into trying to minimize that risk.
Yeah.
Scientists are constantly working on improving ASO design, screening methods to really try to increase their specificity and minimize those chances of them going rogue, so to speak.
So it's about finding that sweet spot between, like, effectiveness and safety.
Exactly.
Got it.
And clinical trials play a huge role in this.
Of course.
You know, these trials are designed to evaluate not only if a drug works, but also is it safe.
Right.
And so it's a multi-stage process with these kind of rigorous checks and balances along the way to make sure that any potential risks are identified and addressed.
That makes me feel better. And, you know, the fact that ASOs are already being used to treat some diseases is a testament to their potential, right?
Yeah.
We talked about nusinersen for SMA, but then there are others like patisiran and enotersen for ATTR.
Right.
And those are being used in the clinic.
Yeah. And, you know, what's fascinating about those two drugs in particular is that they really highlight the kind of competitive landscape in this field.
Oh, interesting.
So they both target the same protein, but they were developed by different companies.
Okay.
Using different ASO designs, different modifications.
So it's like different teams kind of racing to solve the same puzzle.
Yeah.
Using their own sort of unique approach.
Exactly. And that's a great way to put it. And I think ultimately that kind of competition is a good thing.
Right.
You know, it drives innovation and it ultimately leads to better treatments for patients.
Absolutely. It's so exciting to see how this technology is evolving. And it sounds like there's this whole pipeline of potential ASO drugs that are in various stages of development. You know, the research you sent mentioned to Tyfers for ALS,
yeah.
RG01-INTEL for Alport syndrome, Cobomarsin for a type of lymphoma. And it seems like, you know, just the possibility.
It's incredible.
It's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just a very small sampling, really.
Right.
What's really remarkable is just how many different types of diseases ASOs are now being explored to treat. We've talked about genetic disorders, cancer, neurodegenerative diseases.
It's amazing.
It really is quite extraordinary.
It really feels like we're on the cusp of, like, a new era in medicine.
It does.
But, you know, with all this talk about this, like, cutting edge science, I'm also kind of curious about, like, the more practical side of things.
Sure.
You know, ASOs are complex molecules to design and manufacture.
Yeah.
So how does that all translate to, like, you know, cost?
Yeah, that's a really important question. And it's something that I think often comes up with new and innovative treatments.
Of course.
You know, ASOs can be very expensive to develop and produce. And unfortunately, that cost can sometimes limit access for some patients.
Right. Because I imagine the cost of, you know, research and development and then running clinical trials and then actually, like, manufacturing these complex molecules.
Mm-hmm.
It all adds up.
It does. It does. It all adds up. And, you know, while there are often, you know, patient assistance programs and other initiatives to try to help with those costs, it does remain a very complex issue with no easy solutions.
For sure. Well, nusinersen, the drug that we talked about earlier for SMA, I feel like that's a perfect example of this.
It is.
Because, you know, while it's been this life-changing treatment for so many children with SMA, it's also one of the most expensive drugs in the world.
It is, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it highlights the need for, I think, ongoing conversations and discussions about drug pricing and how can we make these kind of life-saving treatments accessible to everyone who needs them.
100%, yeah.
It's a good reminder that scientific progress is only one part of the equation, right? We also need to really be thinking about and addressing the social and economic factors that can create barriers to people being able to access treatment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, despite those challenges, it seems like there's still a lot of reason for optimism when it comes to the field of ASO therapy.
There is.
One of the things that really struck me while I was reading through all of this research was the potential for personalized medicine using ASOs.
Right.
It's like the ultimate form of tailored healthcare in a way.
It is. I mean, because ASOs can target specific RNA sequences, it opens up this amazing possibility of creating truly personalized treatments for people. Imagine, you can design an ASO that targets the exact genetic mutations that are driving an individual's disease.
Wow. It's like having this molecular toolbox to go in and address the unique kind of genetic vulnerabilities of each person.
That's the vision. And while, again, it's still relatively early days, researchers are already exploring these personalized ASO therapies for a whole range of diseases.
That's incredible. How close are we to this becoming like, a reality? Like, what are some of the challenges that still need to be overcome?
So I think one of the biggest challenges is that we need an even deeper understanding of the genetic basis of these diseases, right? It's like trying to solve this like really complex puzzle. We need all the pieces to see the full picture.
So we need to know which genes are involved, how they're interacting, how like variations in those genes influence an individual's risk of developing a disease or even responding to treatment.
100%, yeah.
Okay.
But thankfully, our understanding of the human genome is constantly expanding.
Yeah.
Advances in, areas like genomics and bioinformatics are giving us a much clearer picture of this sort of, blueprint of life,
Right.
which I think is incredibly exciting for the future of personalized medicine, including ASO therapies.
It's like we're constantly refining the map, revealing like new pathways and possibilities.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it.
So if we could break it down to like a specific example, how might this kind of personalized ASO approach work for something like, let's say, cancer? Because cancer is often driven by multiple genetic mutations, right?
Right. So imagine being able to analyze a patient's tumor,
Okay.
identify the specific genetic mutations that are driving its growth, and then design a custom ASO that targets those mutations.
Wow.
That's really like precision oncology at its finest.
Yeah, it's like hitting the cancer where it hurts based on its unique kind of genetic weaknesses.
Precisely. And that kind of approach is already being explored in clinical trials for different types of cancer.
Wow, that's incredible. But cancer's also like notoriously good at evolving, right? Becoming resistant to different treatments.
Right.
So could the same thing happen with ASOs?
It's definitely a risk,
Yeah.
and it's something that researchers are actively looking at and studying. Cancer cells are incredibly adaptable, and they can sometimes find ways to kind of circumvent our treatments.
Right.
However, scientists are already developing strategies to try to overcome that.
Like what?
So one approach is to actually combine ASOs with other therapies.
Okay.
So you're creating this kind of multi-pronged attack
Yeah.
that makes it much harder for the cancer to develop resistance.
So it's about kind of staying one step ahead of the game.
Exactly.
Right.
It's this constant kind of, game of chess almost between scientists and the relentless adaptability of cancer cells.
Huh.
And, ASOs are a very powerful new piece on the chessboard.
That's incredible to think about, all the different possibilities there. But with all this talk about manipulating our genes and, these powerful new technologies, I feel like we also need to address the kind of elephant in the room, which is the ethical considerations surrounding ASO technology.
I think that's a crucial point. Yeah. ASOs are incredibly powerful tools, and like any powerful tool, they can be used for good or ill.
Right.
So I think it's vital to be having these really open and honest conversations about the ethical implications of this technology.
Where do we draw the line? Like, once we have this ability to manipulate our genes with such precision, how do we ensure that this technology is only used responsibly and ethically?
Yeah. That's a big question.
It is a big question.
I don't know if there are any easy answers.
Right.
But I think one really important consideration is making sure that ASOs are being used for therapeutic purposes.
Okay.
So in other words, to actually treat diseases, alleviate suffering, rather than using them for, say, genetic enhancement.
So it's like the difference between using ASOs to help a child with, you know, a life-threatening genetic disorder versus using them to, like, enhance someone's intelligence or their athletic ability.
Exactly, 100%, yeah. And, you know, to be fair, there's really no evidence that ASOs are currently being used for these non-therapeutic purposes. But I think it's crucial to be having these conversations now to establish ethical guidelines and prevent that potential for misuse in the future.
So it's about kind of balancing the immense potential of ASOs with a really, like, thoughtful and ethical approach to how we're developing them and how we're applying them.
100%, yeah. I think it's our responsibility as a society to make sure that this powerful technology is used for good and that those benefits are accessible to everyone.
I think that's a great note to end this part of our conversation on. This has been, like, truly a fascinating dive into the world of ASOs, the science, the potential, but then also, as you said, the ethical considerations that we need to be thinking about.
It's been a pleasure discussing this with you.
You know, one thing that I thought was really interesting as I was going through all this research is how ASOs, they're not just about creating these new therapies.
Right.
They're also turning out to be, like, incredibly valuable tools for scientists who are trying to just better understand how biology works.
Yeah, absolutely. ASOs give researchers this really precise way to study how genes work.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like having, like, a dimmer switch for gene expression.
Oh, interesting.
Where you can kind of turn a gene's activity up or down and then see what happens inside the cell.
So you're, like, basically running these experiments to figure out which genes are essential for certain cellular processes or, like, a, you know, involved in a particular disease.
Yeah, exactly. And I can give you a specific example of that.
Yeah, please.
There was this really fascinating study where researchers used an ASO to target a protein called PKC-alpha.
Okay.
In cancer cells.
And PKC-alpha, that's involved in, like, cell growth and signaling, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
So by using an ASO to kind of inhibit PKC-alpha, the researchers could actually directly observe what were the effects of doing that on tumor growth. And they actually tested this in mice. And what they found was that the ASO significantly inhibited the growth of several different types of human tumor cells that had been implanted in these mice.
Wow. So they were able to, like, put the brakes on cancer growth just by silencing this one gene.
That's incredible.
And it not only provided some, like, really important insights into the role of this particular protein in cancer, but it also suggests that it could be a really promising target for new ASO-based therapies.
Wow. It really highlights how ASOs can be used not just to treat diseases, but to actually, like, go deeper and better understand those diseases at, like, a really fundamental level.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
And as our knowledge of RNA biology just continues to kind of expand and evolve, you know, I think we can expect to see even more creative and groundbreaking applications of ASOs in both the research setting, but also in the realm of medicine.
It really does feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface of what might be possible with this technology.
We are. It's very early days, really.
So for our listener who's been on this deep dive with us today, what would you say are kind of the, like, the key takeaways about ASOs and what they hold for the future of medicine?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of most important takeaway is that ASOs represent a completely new way of tackling these diseases.
Yeah.
So by targeting these RNA molecules, we can potentially correct the kind of the root cause of a disease, not just treat the symptoms once they arise.
And we've seen that potential be realized in some really incredible cases with, you know, ASO-based drugs already being approved for diseases like SMA, DMD, HATTR,
right,
which is just incredibly promising for patients.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, the future holds even more promise with ASOs now being investigated in such a wide range of conditions, from, like we were talking about, you know, cancer, to these really challenging neurodegenerative disorders.
Yeah, it's hard to overstate kind of the potential breadth of impact here.
And then I think even beyond their therapeutic potential, like we were just talking about, ASOs are also helping researchers unlock some of these big mysteries about biology, which then, of course, paves the way for even more groundbreaking discoveries down the line.
It's all very exciting.
It's incredibly exciting. It's an exciting time to be kind of following this field, for sure.
100%.
Well, this has been an amazing deep dive into the world of ASOs. I feel like I've learned so much, and I'm honestly even more excited about the future of this technology now, having had this conversation with you.
It's been a pleasure.
And to our listener, thank you so much for joining us on this incredible exploration of ASOs.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We hope you found it as fascinating and as thought-provoking as we did.